one and all, once again, to Nerds on the Rocks, episode 176. This week, we're coming to you from our nation's great Independence Day, which I really feel bad having to say this, but I feel like I have to. This isn't actually the day we gained our freedom, it's the day we declared we were going to take our freedom. So I think some people would think like this is the day America was born.
It was.
Technically.
It was just born of a maw that was the Earth, and it came up as a giant crater.
Yeah, it was the day everyone decided, okay, yeah, this is the fuck you England paper we're gonna write. And then they had to wait around a couple days while they got everyone to sign it. meanwhile, they were still fighting the war at the time and continued to fight it for several years. And basically made it through because we showed France, okay, these Americans aren't just screwing around, so they gave us enough help to win. Thank you, France.
Yes, and then we turned our backs to them several years. Well, several decades later, but what can you do? Anyhow, as you heard, we are joined this week by Dan.
Hello.
And a special guest, Mr. James.
You should go see Edge of Tomorrow.
Standing at the Edge of Tomorrow, it's all up to you how far I go. I don't know why. Every time I hear that, I always think of the Saved by the Bell to Kaijia theme song, which is probably an obscure reference, because I'm sure most people don't even remember Saved by the Bell to Kaijia.
I remember that it existed, and it did not have the entire cast of the show, and that's all I know about it.
Which I actually think was a good thing in hindsight. It's always weird when everybody ends up going to the same school on TV shows. When you have, you know, like, and from high school, because usually you have, like, one person who's, like, super intelligent. Then you have, like, the slacker. And then you have, like, the pretty girl and the popular guy. Like, they all shouldn't end up in the same college.
And you have the token minority.
Yeah, but they shouldn't all end up in the same college because just by the nature of where they were in high school, they're going to get into different schools. Some are going to get into amazing schools and some aren't.
Some of them are going to get into drugs.
Yeah. And some of them aren't even going to go to school. I mean, that's the reality of it. So it's always weird like when like you'd have a cast and like all 10 people move to the same college. And then they all move to the same town after they graduated and they were all best friends forever and ever. But I digress. This week we are actually talking about Independence Day. Not the holiday, well, partially the holiday, but more the movie starring Will Smith and Bill Pullman. And just as an aside, Bill Pullman is from Hornell, New York, I believe.
Cool.
That's not the point about it.
I thought you were about to tell us he wasn't American, like how half the superheroes these days aren't American. Spider-Man's not American. Superman's not American.
Captain America is our old Batman now.
Yeah.
Batman's American now.
Now our Batman's from Boston. He should be.
That's as American as you can get, right?
Yeah.
But I was just going to relay something, because Bill Pullman's from Hornell, New York. Hornell is a very small town in upstate New York. I actually went to his college about 20 minutes away from there, and I had a couple of people from my school went there, and they would always mention Bill Pullman whenever somebody made fun of their town, because he's like the only thing that has ever come there. So anytime somebody said anything, it's like, oh, but Bill Pullman from Independence Day came from our town. I'm like, I have movies and TV shows filmed here like every day and we don't even care. So you have one person, it's like, go you. But I guess before we get started, this is actually something. Oh, let's explain why we're here and why I'm kind of upset with this right now.
We're here because of America.
We're here because of America. F yeah. But we're here because if you listen to this show recently, you know that Sam and Justin aren't really huge into watching movies. They have these huge gaps in their movie libraries.
I think we counted Justin has actually seen a total of 23 movies, half of which are Fast and Furious sequels. Yet he still hasn't seen Tokyo Drift.
For good reason.
That's not necessary to see.
We were going through this one of those times. We usually do this after we record, and they mentioned that they hadn't seen Independence Day, so I figured it'd be a great experiment to have them watch Independence Day, and we'll talk about it on the podcast. Mind you, we did this back in December of last year. They had 7 months to find a movie. They could rent it, they could buy it, you can stream it on Amazon or iTunes. It's on cable TV. You could DVR it or whatever. 7 months.
I actually got like multiple digital copies for free for like whenever I would sign up a video service. I'm like, hey, here's 7 free movies. And I'm like, okay, I'll take a copy of Independence Day. And it is one of the easiest to find movies. I can guarantee you it is in both bargain bins of Walmart right now for $7. Right next to a copy of Jonah Hex and Men in Black 2.
Rightfully so.
But yes, you could. They had 7 months to find this movie no matter how they wanted to. And apparently neither one of them watched it because neither one of them wanted to show up this week. So we pulled in James and we're going to talk about Independence Day. Now, part of the problem with that is we've all seen Independence Day here, but none of us have seen it recently.
Yeah.
I will go first and explain why I haven't seen it recently. Well, I've seen it the most recent, I think. I've seen it within the last year. And part of that is because every 4th of July, I set it up and I do a very, very bad pun. I have my red, white, and blue celebration, which is I had to take the Blu-ray copy of the movie that I own, like a real American. if you know me, you know I enjoy a nice drink with my movie, so I usually did red wine. This year I'm switching to white wine because then the other part makes a bit more sense. It was white meat, which isn't really that great. This year we're going to do red meat and white wine. I don't even know if those pair together. I forget how wine pairs with food. But yes, so I haven't seen it this year because I wanted to save it for Friday for the actual podcast. I'm recording this on the 2nd of July. So I'm going off of memory. What about you two?
The last time I saw it was definitely not within the year. Maybe since 2010, so maybe it's in like this decade that we're in currently. Maybe. But I doubt it.
Oh, you maybe.
I might have beat you. I don't know if I have watched the entire movie all the way through since the first time I saw it 12 years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Yeah.
The last time I remember seeing it was only a piece of it on TV. So I don't know the last time I saw the whole thing either.
Yeah, I know I've seen, like, the entire climax on TV a couple times, out of context from the rest of it, but I haven't watched the entire thing through in a while. So yeah. I kind of want to, just because it's been long enough.
I actually find the first half of the movie or so to be pretty boring. Not a huge fan of it, like the first half of it. It gets pretty exciting about halfway through, I think. It gets interesting halfway through.
Well, I don't want to say boring, but I feel like that's part of the type of, I mean, just to kind of compare it. And I'm sure James isn't going to agree with me on this. But like watching Jaws right now, and a lot of that is kind of build up because you don't really want to show the enemy threat too early on.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of the build-up. It's kind of getting to know the characters because, especially at this time, like, we take it for granted now. But, like, Will Smith wasn't a household name as far as an actor went. He was a rapper and that goofball kid from The Fresh Prince.
That's what he still is to me, in my heart.
Now he's a creepy dad in my heart.
Creepy dad? More like black dad, which means he's awesome.
He is a creepy... Well, not a creepy dad. He just has weird kids.
Yeah, no.
He's not good at shepherding his kids into professional careers.
I mean, can you blame him? His son is Jaden Smith, and he, like, just look at him.
Yeah, but he has the
second greatest Twitter feed in the history of mankind.
I'm afraid of the first
thank
one.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so honored.
Is the first one Horse Ebooks, obviously, right?
Yes, obviously.
And Jaden is, like, second very closely because it's almost the same exact thing.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was... I mean, even looking at it now, I mean, we'll get onto its kind of legacy later on, because, I mean, there's a reason that Will Smith was essentially known as the 4th of July kid. But, yeah, this movie had a budget of $75 million, which nowadays isn't... That would be, like, mid-tier, maybe lower-tier for a film.
Yeah, I think Looper maybe cost that much. It helps that the problem is you don't really have mid-sized budgets anymore. You either like your small indie movies, you'll occasionally have $20 million comedies, and then you skip straight up to the $100 million, $200 million tentpoles. Like, there really isn't an in-between anymore, which at the time, this was basically the higher end. I mean, this was the kind of thing you would put towards your Terminator 2s or your True Lies or your Titanics. Well, I guess Titanic was a bit higher.
But while you talk, let's see how much like True Love was, because James Cameron has a reputation.
Yeah, I think True Lies was the first movie to cost $100
million. Was it really? I feel like, how much was Terminator 2 then? Because I feel like,
I think it was like 90-something.
Wow, yeah. True Lies is $100-$120 million. And nowadays, again, this would be seen as a mid-tier budget for out of films. And Terminator 2 was only 94 to 102. Wow, that is really cheap.
I have no sense of, like, scale when it comes to movies like this. Like, that means nothing. All these numbers mean nothing to me.
Well, I mean, for comparison's sake, I think The Amazing Spider-Man was, like, 225 or something.
Yeah, it still means nothing to me, essentially.
Okay, I guess to put it in perspective, the most expensive movie ever is the third Pirates of the Caribbean at $300 million. And below that is Tangled at 260, and right after that is Spider-Man 3. And basically at that point, no one ever dares to go that high just out of the risk, because at that point you're basically going, if you're not one of the biggest movies ever, you're screwed. Like John Carter at $250 million.
I mean, I understand how much how excessive that is, but I don't, like, to me that money doesn't equate to either quality or anything really.
Oh, no, money doesn't mean quality at all. That's part of the problem.
Yeah, I guess. I think that is true. But, like, I don't know. I don't know how to, like, gauge what that means to me. You say these numbers, and I'm like, that's the thing.
Oh, personally, it shouldn't mean anything to you. It just kind of means, like, how much money was poured into it.
Yeah.
I guess more I was thinking Independence Day. Like, nowadays, Independence Day would be a much smaller movie. Like, most films nowadays are about $150, $200 million, so this would be half of that. But this is also almost 20 years ago, so that was a much different market. And this is one of the reasons we started having these big summer tentpole movies. Like, everybody has. Jaws was the one that started the big blockbuster. Star Wars was the one that started the big blockbuster. Batman was the one that started the big blockbuster. Everybody has, like, their starting point, but this is one of those. This is why, like, every year you try to have that big 4th of July weekend movie.
Yeah, this was the one that turned it from, okay, we're going to, like, Jaws's main innovation was basically the wide release, where instead of having to slow open from a couple cities and then building up across the entire country, it would just go bam. It's entirely across the country, one big weekend, big marketing campaign lead up to these basically these big, broad, mass audience kind of movies situated at key summer points like Memorial Day or July 4th or big points like that. And then I think one of the big things that Independence Day changed was emphasizing the marketing, since I'm pretty sure half of the reason this movie did so well was that initial trailer, which I think was the first one to play at the Super Bowl.
I don't know. I don't know that much. I was, oh yeah, we literally had that. Well, okay, I was 11, but I didn't actually watch the Super Bowl. I really just started watching it for the commercials, like, maybe a decade ago. But,
looking up the marketing, Fox paid $1.3 million to put the spot in front of the Super Bowl, which I believe was one that basically showed off the big money shot of the White House blowing up.
Which is also on the part, I think it's on one of the posters. It's probably on the DVD cover. It's one of the, I would say, one of the most iconic shots in the movies in the past two or three decades. That shot of the White House being destroyed. And something that people mock the director for now, because he always wants to destroy a major American landmark in his films. Roland Emmerich.
Yes, Roland Emmerich, directors of Universal Soldier, Stargate, and Godzilla. And The Patriot.
Oh, not the good Godzilla. The
and
other.
Anonymous. In 10,000 BC. Principle. And the Noah's Ark Principle. Okay, basically, I'm just dodging off all the interesting stuff, like The Day After Tomorrow, or 2012, or White House Down, which nobody saw, which sucks, because it's awesome.
White House Down is awesome. And are they making a sequel? I get these two confused.
No, they're making a sequel to Olympus Has Fallen, which was the not-so-good one. But it was also insane.
Yes. Timing. It always seems weird, because it's not like these films were copying each other, it's just like they released around the same time, and that always sucks.
Were they really not? Like, I assumed that they were those very typical, like, movies that knock off each other that come out around the same time.
Well, no, I mean, because they came out, what, 2.5 months apart, there's really no, like, there's no way to copy it. Like, you wouldn't even know if the other one would be successful.
Oh, yeah, no, I know. But, like, the fact that, like, in Hollywood, how it's, like, popular for things to basically do that, like, have direct, almost like rip-offs because you buy the script from somebody or whatever, and...
Oh, I mean, that's a possibility, but, yeah. I mean, it's the same thing with, like, it's like Dredd and The Raid, Redemption, where those are very similar movies, but neither one of them were copies of each other. They just came out around a very close window. Yeah, usually that happens a lot in animation. Like,
yeah.
I think some of them
maybe... You don't think DreamWorks' Ants was a original idea inspired by a spark of creative genius?
Okay, Ants and A Bug's Life, I could give you, but there were some...
Most DreamWorks movies around, up until about 2010, were kind of rip-offs of Pixar.
Kung Fu Panda was basically the beginning of, what if we made good movies, instead of, what if we made Jerry Seinfeld as a bee trying to have sex with Renee Zellweger. That was a movie that was released by a major studio.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, Independence Day, am I right?
Independence Day. we kind of touched on it, but yeah, I'm just going to wiki this real quick. Independence Day is a 1996 American sci-fi fiction... Wait, that was redundant.
Sci-fi fiction.
Sci-fi fiction.
Science fiction fiction.
Yeah, science fiction.
It's fictional sci-fi.
Yeah.
Science fiction disaster film about an alien invasion of Earth. The film stars Will Smith, Bill Pullman, Jeff Goldblum, Mary McDonnell, Jude Hirsch, Margaret Cullen, Randy Quaid, Robert Ligon, James Reborn, Vivica A. Fox, and Harry Connick Jr. The narrative focuses on a desperate group of people who converge in the Nevada desert and, along with the rest of the human population, participate in a last-chance counterattack on July 4th, the same date as the Independence Day holiday in the United States. What a coincidence that it was directed by German director Roland Emmerich, who co-wrote the script with the producer Dean Devlin. So yes, memories of this film.
Memories of Independence Day?
Independence Day.
It was pretty much the first thing I did with my dad when I moved to the new place. So we were just sort of in the hotel waiting around. And we caught it on cable. My dad's like, "Hey, James, you'll like this movie." And I was like, "Okay." I watched it. Hey, that was neat. And it took me years after before I could remember what it was. I would just go thinking, "Hey, what was that movie where the aliens blew up the White House? And then that cool black guy and the weird science guy from Jurassic Park got to fly up into space. And then the president made a cool speech."
An awesome speech, not a cool speech. That was an amazing speech.
Okay, yes. That is basically, we might get to it later, but that's basically the modern standard for inspirational speech before the final battle that basically eclipses every other.
Yeah, you can only have one original. and you mentioned something, and I completely agree with you. It's like this movie is beloved by a lot of people, and it's really just like a, oh, this was enjoyable, and then you just completely forget it once you're done with the movie. Like, it has some iconic moments, like we mentioned the White House being exploded or destroyed. And I think the other one that a lot of people like to quote is "Welcome to Earth," which
Earth.
Yeah, Earth.
He actually does say it is Earth.
Yeah.
It's beautiful because it's such a simple moment. He just has that sweet dog fight. The alien pops out. Welcome to Earth. Punches him. It's just simple and effective. Which, actually, simple and effective is the best way to describe the movie. Like, when I talk about the movie being functional and, like, works, that sort of seems like it's down-talking to it. But considering how many blockbusters just throw up effects at the screen and barely attempt the script, this is actually a pretty competently put-together movie. Like, as much as the first almost hour or so is pretty slow, like up until the main attack, it does a good job setting up all the specific character traits that then get paid off by the end of it.
Yeah, which is, again, what you want to do in a movie like this is you want people to care about the human characters, because we don't really see much of the aliens. They are just a threat. And if we don't care about any humans, it's hard to care about all of mankind. And I know that's a weird thing to say, but it is hard to just say care about everybody at once.
Yeah,
so you
it's
wanna,
so intangible.
Yeah, so you want to have like these core characters, and kind of to bring it to a recent example, it's one of the problems people have with the the new Godzilla film, minus spoilers, is that a lot of people related with Bryan Cranston's character a lot more than his son. So when his son became the lead of the film, a lot of people were tuned out because they didn't care for his character. And over the course of his tenure, they don't really do much to develop his character other than I want to get home to my kid and my wife.
Yeah, as much as I love the new Godzilla, it very much is a movie about the insignificance of people. So while I am bummed that he wasn't more interesting, it's not like a major deal breaker, at least for me.
Oh no, I didn't mind the movie either. I see people's point with that, but I'm saying this is why you spend time in here, especially with this film where there isn't one central main character. We have Will Smith's character who is central. We have Jeff Goldblum as a scientist who is essential. We have the president who's played by Bill Pullman who's essential. You have the crazy guy, who I think is Randy Quaid.
Yes.
Who becomes an essential part of the film. And I would say those are kind of our four viewpoint characters in this film. Each one of them has a separate thread, but it all comes together at the end for the giant battle. Would you agree, disagree?
I mean, it sounds like a pretty accurate... Yeah, yeah, I would say so. I don't think it takes a lot to break down Independence Day. I mean...
No, it doesn't. I mean, I think it's a... perfectly fine three-act structure.
Yeah, pretty much.
your introductory action is introducing all these characters and introducing their problems. The president is dating, I think, Goldblum's ex-wife.
I don't really remember.
Or does she work
like that.
For the president?
I don't know.
I forget either way. Will Smith is kind of... I think he's on sabbatical from... He's in the army, but he's home with his wife and kids right now. And Randy Quaid is a drunk who's traveling with his kids. And, you know, they all kind of have their own personal demons. Then the alien attack comes, and that's the attack. That's them trying to make contact. That's them trying to flee and trying to get to safety. And all that other stuff. And then, of course, you have the climax. And unlike War of the Worlds, there's an actual means for them to defeat the alien instead of just like...
It just happens. Well, I mean, War of the Worlds is more like a statement, I guess. I always see it that way, at least.
It's
less
very
of a story
much...
and more like a statement of what we are.
Yeah.
Independence movie is like a pure action. Not pure action, but it's like it's a purely an entertainment source.
Yeah, it's very much that
like,
broad blockbuster where War of the Worlds is more trying to get at some specific idea about our insignificance.
Yeah, because I mean, it originated as like a story that was just posing an idea.
Yeah.
So as a movie, that's all it does is present an idea.
Yeah. I guess real quick, I've always find this funny. Eiru cast a note. It's always weird because this is again going back to Godzilla. This is what's going to happen with Godzilla and the Avengers. We have a brother and sister duo who play husband and wife in Godzilla. Will Smith's son and his girlfriend's son. I don't think he's married. It's his girlfriend's son. Is played by his nephew from The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. So yeah, that is always kind of that was always kind of interesting. Little Nicky, if any of you watched that show.
That movie or the... Was there
no,
a show?
The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He was his nephew on the show.
I thought you were talking about the movie Little Nicky.
No. Oh, damn, no. No, that's Adam Sandler, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, no.
Yeah, we don't really... I don't like the movie, at least. That was...
I was also going to say, kind of based on the three-day structure as well, is that this film actually takes place over 3 days as well. It starts July 2nd and ends July 4th. So that's another nice little nod to having each day be one part of the rise in action and stuff like that for the basic shot of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like I said, it's really weird going on about a movie from memory, so I'm trying to think of... we've kind of mentioned the iconic moments, and I'm trying to think of, what else happens. Because, the beats... It's one of those broad picture films, because the beats in themselves aren't that important, what happens minute to minute with each of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
like, what's important is the alien invasion, all of these characters forming together, them creating the virus that destroys the alien. And their personal drama, for the most part, is kind of swept under the ground after the first attack is happens.
Yeah. I'm okay with that, though, too, because it's like, that's what I mean when I say, like, the first half of the movie is boring relative to the rest of it. Like, you kind of get to know characters, and, like, you, like, the first half of the movie is a little fuzzy for me, but you get to know characters, and you kind of hear the, and understand what's going on. You set the stage, obviously, it's necessary stuff from the beginning of a movie. I get that. But then halfway through, when the alien invasion's happening, and they're, like, struggling to find it, there's some tension about, like, how they're gonna figure out how to destroy the aliens and fight them and stuff. So there is that dramatic tension there. But then there's, like, the part where they actually do start fighting back, and it gets exciting. Like, that's the exciting part. The exciting part is not learning about the cast and, like, seeing how they deal with things. It's
The
exciting part is how they deal with the threat at hand, which is why it's kind of just a straightforward action movie, which is okay. Totally cool.
Yeah, which works, because I think if you... And I think this is what happens in some of his Zeta movies, and I think, again, going to a recent movie, I think this is what Michael Bay's Transformers films are guilty of. It's like, if you just beat people over the head with action, you kind of get numb to it by the time it's supposed to mean anything, because it doesn't stand out in the rest of the film, where this stands out, because, like, there is no huge heroic battle until the very end of the film. Like, you get Will Smith's thing, and, you know, you needed that because they needed an actual alien to study and research. You got that. But other than that, there isn't, like, this huge dogfight, because it makes no sense. Either you're going to wipe out a whole bunch of humans if they're doing the initial attack, or you're going to wipe out the aliens, which kind of diminishes their actual potential as villains, their threats.
Yeah.
And that's why you save it. And like I said, I think the other thing that works in this in that favor is that it's a short time period. It's 3 days. Like, if this was, you know, padded out over months or weeks and stuff like that, it wouldn't feel the impact, because it's like the aliens aren't doing anything. They're just chilling and waiting for us to counterattack them or something. There's a sense of urgency to it.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like it actually follows a lot of the Avengers sort of arc of, and like, rise and fall of action, because the Avengers is a pretty, it's just one that comes to mind. I'm not saying Avengers is perfect and, like, the end-all, be-all or whatever, but it has a very good curve of, like, here we're laying out the plot, then we got some action, then we got, like, lay down some plot, we get into a little dip, and then we have some more action and stuff, and everything's meaningful, like, unlike what you said with Transformers, where every battle just seems like, oh, there's another battle. And so by the end of it, it's just like, okay, this big battle is just, again, another battle.
it understands that for these kind of things, you don't necessarily have to have, like, super complex character arcs, but you do need to put in the work into making people invested in them. Like, you need to establish that empathy of, okay, I understand who Bill Pullman is and why I care about them. I understand who Will Smith is and why I care. You basically put in that work, and if you do that right in your opening beats, then yeah, that can carry you a really long way, like it does here, where they do just the right amount at the beginning, and then boom, you're on board the whole time.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yes, and you also and again, I don't want to beat on Transformers too much.
You can.
I have no problem with that. The other thing is, when you introduce an arc for a character at the start of the film, make sure it's something that carries throughout the film, and not necessarily something that's all you needed for the first arc to get the action going. I thought Age of Extinction was extremely guilty of that, of introducing, like, we need time waster. So it's just kind of, cause, like, Bill Pullman's introduced as, like, he's estranged from his wife, who's a White House employee, not the first AD, because he was so kind of invested in his work, which is a habit he actually took from his dad as well. And that kind of plays into the film later on, because he's so kind of anal about all it is. He's the one who deciphers everything and comes up with the countervirus.
Yeah.
And that pays off. Will Smith is kind of, he's grounded, but he doesn't want to be. And this is why he risks his life at the end of the film, to be one of the fighters to go up and attack it. And it's the same thing with the president, who wants to take charge, and he decides to lead the attack. So, you know, these are character beats that were introduced, built on, and, you know, had some type of finality by the end of it. I say some type, because there is talks of doing a sequel in 2 years.
Of Independence Day?
Yeah.
Interesting, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I think Bill Pullman's coming back, but Will Smith isn't, and maybe some other people are going to be there too.
Huh. Yeah, I mean, it's been. I mean, I'm not going to say it until it starts development, but it is, I think it's set for July of 2016. And yeah, Will Smith has, he's too busy doing stuff like After Earth to come.
Good one. To,
well, I mean, he his focus seems to be on launching his kid's career. Because I'm almost certain every film his kid's been in has been either with him or he's co-financed. But I also think he financed The Karate Kid.
Yeah, which was actually not that bad a movie, the new one.
No, it wasn't, but it's like he wants to make his kid a star, and the rest of Hollywood's just not having that.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I was slandering Justin and Sam. I completely forgot to mention. I was talking to Sam about this, and he mentioned this, and maybe one of you two can help or have a better idea. Why is this movie shortened to ID4? Like, I know why, because Independence Day is July 4th.
I have no idea. I'm seeing it on the theatrical poster that it has the ID4 behind the logo, and I'm really not sure how. Because it isn't like Independence Day is some sort of combo where it slams two together. Well, I guess In and then Dependence, maybe. But even then, that doesn't have much to do with it. So how it became that, I don't know. And I didn't even hear it referred as that for until years later online.
It's certain ID4 online, usually. But I didn't notice it until I'm like, oh, is it just a fan thing? But no, it's on the promotional things as well. And looking at Wiki, the film wasn't even released on July 4th, so it's not even like it's the release date.
Yeah, I actually just I went to the Wikipedia page because I was on it already, and I just control F'd ID4, and it says, at the time, the production was nicknamed ID4 because Warner Bros. Owned the rights to the title Independence Day, and Devlin had hoped if Fox executive noticed the addition in dailies, the impact of the new dialogue, blah, 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 blah.
Okay,
so
copyright
I guess,
stuff.
Yeah, there was a copyright issue, so...
Oh, okay. That still doesn't explain why they kept, because, I mean, a lot of things have nicknames during production.
Yeah.
And you don't usually keep it. I think, The Dark Knight was, like, Rory's first kiss or something like that.
Yeah, I know Blue Harvest was the codename for, I think, either Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi.
You don't see that in the...
So well, you do see references to it, though. There's an extended universe book called Red Harvest.
Huh.
Yeah.
Not canon anymore.
I mean, like, if I come back later on, like, GoldenEye, it was the resort that Ian Fleming wrote some of his books at. The World Is Not Enough was said in, I think it's the On Her Majesty's Secret Service as his family motto, mm-hmm. And that came back as a title. So it's possible. It's just weird that you did that as your marketing, because I used to joke that it's going to be ID4 too for the sequel, which is just really confusing as a marketing.
They didn't make it Labor Day. Oh, wait, no, there's already a movie named called Labor Day. Shit.
It's a drawing board.
Yeah, apparently it was some theaters actually showed it the evening of July 2nd, which I feel like that might have been one of the first examples of that, just because there wasn't as much of the anticipation cycle in movies at that point. So that was probably one of the first examples of the night before showing. Which I think used to be almost entirely midnight, but now they seem to have 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. stuff now.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think Captain America was 7 p.m.?
Huh. Yeah, I imagine a lot of it depends on theaters. They just, like studios just say, okay, you can have evening showings for whatever your evening times are.
Yeah. I haven't seen a movie recently, especially at midnight.
Yeah,
or whatever.
The only time I've actually cool seen it, the is... movie the night before was for Avengers, which was midnight, and yeah. That was just because some of my friends had to leave the day after, so that was the only time we had a time to.
I think I've done one movie at midnight, and that was The Dark Knight Rises, and that was partially because I did the marathon, which I do not recommend doing ever.
Some of my friends did the Avengers
like
marathon, and that was the thing.
Avengers marathon is in, like, Iron Man, Incredible Hulk, Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America, and God.
I was actually going to do Avengers 1, and it sold out. And then you realize it's 6 movies, and they started,
Sit through Iron Man, like, Incredible Hulk and Iron Man 2 in a row. I mean...
I like Incredible Hulk.
I kind of like Incredible Hulk. I want to give it another shot.
Yeah, but, I mean, it's not like you sit through it. They give you, like, half an hour break in between films.
Yeah.
And they give you food tickets as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they did just a Phase 2 marathon of just Iron Man 3, Thor 2, Cap 2, and Guardians, that would be slightly more manageable. I mean, unless they do an entire Phase 1 and 2 Mega Marathon.
I wouldn't say that, but
that would,
I would
be the whole day.
That would be insane.
I assume they would start with the Avengers and then Iron Man 3 and then the rest of it.
Yeah, I guess maybe.
There was also one, going back, I wanted to do this. In hindsight, it's probably best I didn't. They were doing a Lord of the Rings Extended Edition Marathon.
I was going to mention, like, do you think they'll do that for Hobbit 3? Have, like, Lord of the Rings 1, 2, 3, and then Hobbit 1, 2, 3?
Who would do that? First of all, who wants to see an extended edition of The Hobbit to begin with? But to imagine sitting through all three of those in a row, I mean...
People do it just, like, in their backyard or whatever, however people watch movies these days.
I'm having trouble, like, imagining someone wanting to watch the second Hobbit movie more than once to begin with, but, like, all of them in a row, that's mad.
Well, there are fans out there. I mean, these movies make money. It's not like they don't, so...
There are a couple fans of Hobbit 2. I'm guessing most of them just sort of forget the entire middle.
I still haven't seen it, so I mean, I'm good on that one.
The opening is okay. The middle is insufferable. Basically, just watch the parts when Smaug are on screen. And when Smaug stops talking, just turn the movie off, and it'll be like, okay, I'm done.
I want to rag on The Hobbit now, but we're talking about Independence Day.
Talking about Independence Day.
Oh, yeah.
Very ooshy talking about Independence Day. Yeah.
We're at least talking about movies. We're keeping to a distinct topic.
Yeah. I haven't derailed to talk about Watch Dogs yet.
Okay. Speaking of, you know, going back to Independence Day, and we did mention this before, the speech that President White Whitmore gives his troops before going into battle. I can't do it justice. I honestly can't. So just imagine that I entered it here.
Good morning. In less than an hour, aircraft from here will join others from around the world. And you will be launching the largest aerial battle in the history of mankind. Mankind, that word should have new meaning for all of us today. We can't be consumed by our petty differences anymore. We will be united in our common interest. Perhaps it's fate that today is the 4th of July, and you will once again be fighting for our freedom. Not from tyranny, oppression, or persecution, but from annihilation. We're fighting for our right to live, to exist. And should we win the day, the 4th of July will no longer be known as an American holiday, but as the day when the world declared in one voice, we will not go quietly into the night. We will not vanish without a fight. We're going to live on. We're going to survive. Today, we celebrate our Independence Day.
Damn, I feel inspired. Punch out aliens and eat red meat. Man, every other Air Force pilot is just staring at us really angry right now. It's like the president is talking.
I wonder how did non-Americans felt.
I have to imagine they all just sort of groaned, rolling their eyes.
I'll tell you what they didn't feel, liberated.
What, you don't think they're happy that we graced them with our Independence Day to the rest of the world?
No, they felt indebted to us eternally.
Well, I'm talking about...
As they should be.
I'm talking about in the movie itself, not necessarily how people reacted. It's always kind of interesting, because I assume this had to do well across the globe, if it grossed nearly $1 billion back then. But, yeah, it's a very inspiring speech. It is a... And the thing is, it's not a very showy speech, even though it's kind of become iconic. He's on a walkie-talkie? What do you call those things?
Walkie-talkie?
Radio.
Radio.
One of those ancient devices. Yeah, he's on a radio, and he's talking over the outspeaker. It's not a grandiose speech. He's not dressed up in face paint riding his horse. He's not being televised. It's just for the people in front of him. And it's a speech that was quote-unquote, you know, he is the president, so of course he's probably used to speaking in front of an audience. But it was improv, and it was a pretty inspiring speech.
We were talking during it. Hold on. I'll be back.
I guess to set up its box office, it did about $300 million in the U.S. and then about $500 million worldwide, which, even now, that's damn good numbers. Like, Captain America only did about $250 in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, that would have made it, if it was this year, that would make it the highest grossing film of the year so far.
Yeah, because so far, I think X-Men's the highest grossing right now. Like, I think it passed America.
But I have to add, and the thing is, I guess going back, is this was before, in between 3D and IMAX, so it didn't even have those type of things either.
Yeah, it was just a really good marketing campaign, good word of mouth, just elevated to this mega hit. And this was also at the time when $800 million was unheard of.
Yeah, and I think part of that is, I mean, part of it, and I don't want to lament it because I don't mind it, but we get so many movies like this nowadays that it doesn't feel special. Like, I'm sure there were other great movies in 96. I mean, I know a few, but...
Yeah, The Rock and the first Mission Impossible came out that summer.
But, yeah, like, nowadays, like, literally, what happened, we've seen it this summer, is, like, every weekend is a new blockbuster film. It's Cap, it's Spider-Man, it's Days of Future Past, it's Godzilla, it's Edge of Tomorrow, it's Man of It's 22 Jump.
Vegetable of Tomorrow?
It's Transformers. Like, blockbusters. Like, it's gotten to the point where I'm actually surprised that there aren't any major blockbusters in July. Like, we have films that I wouldn't consider any of them blockbusters off the top of my head. Maybe Dawn of the Apes?
Yes.
I would consider them not blockbusters, but I would consider them the summer popcorn fluff.
Deadpool movies. Yeah, like, for the rest of July, the only things I would consider big ones are Apes. Maybe Hercules,
Timenty.
Guardians.
Those aren't.
Yeah.
Guardians.
Yeah, Guardians is August 1st.
Well, I consider early mid August stuff to be part of the summer movie crop.
I think early mid August would actually be August.
Part of the summer movie crop.
No, I don't disagree with you. I'm talking about July specifically because really after Transformers, it's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and then it's really quiet until.
Guardians, and then August. Yeah.
There's so many big like action movies, like big summer action movies this year that I'm just like, I can't even keep track of them. Hercules and Dawn of Planet of the Apes, I were just completely like off my radar. I didn't even realize TMNT was coming out this year until like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, they haven't been marketing it that much.
You don't want to think
like,
about
I think
it coming out.
A lot of it has also been that the blockbuster isn't confined to the summer anymore. Like you have stuff like Captain America and Divergent and, say, Noah coming out in, you know, the springtime, and then I feel like there's some other big fall blockbuster. Hunger Games.
And The Hobbit.
Thor 2 was also.
Yeah.
And I guess Big Hero 6, if you want to count that.
Yeah, I'm considering that.
Kind of. I mean, the studio's last movie made the largest pile of money imaginable, so...
Yeah, but that was an original property that kind of appealed to everybody. This one seems to kind of appeal to dudes. We'll see.
I feel like it's actually got a pretty decent, like, spread out cast wise along gender lines.
Yeah, I mean, it might, but I mean, like,
and I mean,
Frozen
was aimed at mainly women, and
yeah, but it's aimed at. I think it's. I don't want. There's no way to. I was gonna say it's easy. I think it's wiser to aim something at women. Because then they can drag boyfriends, they can drag children to the movies with them. Where, like, I mean, how often do you go to the? How often do you take people to go to the movies with you if it's not something you all want to see?
Basically, define take someone with me because I'm single.
Well, yeah, that's what. I'm sure you go to the movies with your friends. For like, you'll probably go to the movies with your friends with Cap or Wolverine or something, but you want to see Snowpiercer. I assume you're not going to get many people to go out of their way and go see that with you.
I have at least one guy can, and actually, it depends. It'll either be A, if it's a big blockbuster we're excited for, or B, if it's like a specific like artist who made it. Like, we all went to see Wolf of Wall Street together, for example. So we're like, oh shit, yeah, Martin Scorsese, we're in.
Oh, I only go see movies with my friends if they're like big action movies, for the most part. Any Marvel movies, Dark Knight Rises, James Bond movies, Bourne movies. Those are the only movies I can think of.
Is a big family movie.
What?
You don't think of something like 12 Years a Slave as a big bring the whole friend group?
Oh no, I don't like. Not, even families are different. Like, I go to see with my friends. The only movies I go see are those ones. The only like artsy movies or like deep movies that I see are like at home. I never see them in theaters for the most part.
Yeah, I'm at the point where I just try. If there's something I want to see, I try and see it in theaters if I can, just because I prefer watching movies that way. So that's why I like drove 2 hours for something like The Raid 2 or Grand Budapest Hotel.
I don't have time or money to do that. I haven't seen a movie in the theater since Lego Movie, and before that it was... I can't even remember.
Well, the good news is that The Raid 2 is out on digital rental, so you can rent it, because it's the second coming of Christ. Second coming of action movies.
I was going to say it's been a really good summer for me. I've seen 9 or so movies. I've paid for 2 of them.
That's awesome, actually. Yeah.
I'm trying to go for a personal record. I have tickets to go see Dawn of the Planet of the Apes and Purge next week for free. So hopefully that works
out. That's pretty awesome. It's going to be hard to beat last year for me when I saw Monsters University 5 times in theaters.
I'd say that's insane, but I saw Frozen 5 times in theaters. And before that, I'd only ever seen a movie twice. So, but I think I'm going to bring my brother to see Captain America this weekend. So that'll be the first revisit.
It's
second run theater in town. We have a dollar theater,
I got really excited because I haven't seen it yet. That, Amazing Spider-Man, and X-Men I haven't seen in theaters yet, and the only I designed myself to only being able to see X-Men at this point in theaters, if that.
Yeah, you could probably still, it's nice if you have second-run theaters, or what we have now are, and I'm trying to plan around it, and we're still talking about movies, even if we're not talking about Independence Day.
Yeah.
Like, I was just looking at the schedule. Again, one of the perks of living in such a great city. They do movies in the park. So they'll have, like, movies that are screened, like, in the park, at the beach, on, like, your projectors and stuff. So you can come out with, like, picnic blankets and sit down and relax and watch stuff.
I think we have some of those in town.
Yeah, it's a great thing. I always look at this. I never would go. And then I saw that they're playing From Russia with Love. And it's, like,
oh, my God.
It's not just for Russia with the Up. They also give you like a concert.
Holy shit!
It's really awesome. Like, it's movies paired with music. I want to see. Like, they have Three Amigos with mariachi music. I'm like, that would be interesting, but I don't want to waste my freebie.
I've heard actually of some theaters will occasionally have special presentations of 2001: A Space Odyssey with a live orchestra. And yeah, that's basically like ultimate bucket list thing is do that. I mean, I have no idea how I'd find a situation to have that, but
yeah, it's pretty much what they offer at Monaco Youth. I don't know who they are, but I'm like, oh, okay, music in a show. It's free. Well, I could also pay for tickets and they give you like a chair and beer, which I might do. It's only $12, and pretty much what they offer is absolutely one of my favorite movies of all time.
Is it really?
It's incredible.
Oh, I have From Russia with Love. It's top 3 Bond movies for me.
Really?
What are your top 3 Bond movies? Let's go.
It's Honor, Majesty, Secret Service, From Russia with Love, and License to Kill.
Actually, pretty close to mine. Yeah, just swap out License to Kill for Casino Royale. But I'd say License to Kill and GoldenEye would probably round out the top 5.
Casino Royale is really good. Wait, which Casino Royale? Like the...
Daniel Craig. I actually haven't seen the 60s one.
There's actually 2 of them, I think.
Yeah, there's 2 old ones.
Yeah, there's one that's a parody, and then there's one.
That was like a TV movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen either of those, or the Thunderball remake, Never Say Never Again. I've only seen like the main 23 canon.
I've seen both Casino Royales, I've seen Never Say Never Again, but I've only seen them once, because I wanted to do a complete watch through of the franchise, and I think this was...
Yeah, me too.
This was like in 2008 or so. I think it was around the time Quantum of Solace was coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I actually like Quantum of Solace for what it is.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's weird because I appreciate it, but I also hate it more the closer I watch the Casino Royale. Because it's like one long movie. Like, this is like the epilogue of Casino Royale.
Yeah, but I actually haven't watched it since the first time, and I'm pretty sure I can't stand it, but I want to give it another shot. Like, I just popped in the opening one time when I was wrapping up my watch through the Bond movies I hadn't seen, and just that opening chase alone is. It's like, okay, did you just watch the Bourne movies and not pay attention at all to how they edit their action scenes? Like, this is incomprehensible.
Yeah, the first chase is a little bit meh, but the rest of the movie I find entertaining.
Yeah, it has this moment.
I really like Olga Kurylenko as a Bond girl.
I actually did like her. I'm going to give another shot. Like, this one writer I follow has been working on this Bond column for about 3 years, and he's finally almost finished with it. So once that comes out, I'm going to rewatch the whole thing.
Yeah. I tweeted about this earlier. I'm in that weird position with Bond films where it's been long enough since I've seen them all that I want to rewatch them, but I know it's also close enough to when I'm going to rewatch them next year that I don't want to.
Yeah.
Because, like, basically how it goes is I try to do them anytime a new film's coming out, and there's supposed to be one at the end of next year. So that would be, like, August, September, October, November, whatever, for those films. And I'm like, that's about 18 months, and I love the films, but it does take a certain amount of energy to watch them all.
Oh, definitely. That's true for any marathon of any sort of thing.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm also really cheap. So, like, during Thanksgiving, when it's on TV, I will just, Bond's on. Because usually it's on, like, 15 different channels. And I'll watch it.
Spike is always playing one of the Sean Connery era films.
Yeah, so I have no problem flipping through the channel and watching that. But to actually sit down and say, okay, I'm going to watch all of them, takes a certain level of mental preparedness. That, and I should actually be preparing for our Batman thing, because Batman is celebrating his 75th anniversary this month. And I guess on the subject of that, since we aren't really talking about Independence Day, if in case anybody cares, or if you listen to the show and you are interested, we're doing a Batman and Robin 151 proof movie tiny chat on July 25th. And the reason we picked that date is DC declared July 23rd Batman Day. And that is the Friday after that. Since we don't do films in the middle of the week, we're not alcoholics. We are civilized people. So, it's fun. I mean, I'm a huge fan of doing drunken movies in general, but it's great when you get a bunch of people together to do it. I honestly don't know what Tiny Chat Max is. I think last time we had about a dozen people.
I actually haven't seen either of the Schumacher Batmans.
Oh, well, you need to.
I need to.
Yes, you do. By
what
Royal
kind
Snub,
of need to? Is this one of those, like, Troll 2 you need to's, or is this like a fucking Malcolm X you need to kind of thing?
This is a Troll 2
movie. Okay.
Well, okay. Batman Forever is a mixed bag because some people like it, some people don't. I'm in that boat where I can like it or hate it depending on. It really depends on what. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, I don't mind it so much, and other times it's like, this is a travesty. Batman and Robin is... I think Batman and Robin is the prime example of so bad it's good. Like, it transcends being awful to being something completely unique and special. Like I always say, like, there's a reason that people still quote that movie 20 years later. And yes, there is a reason people still quote this movie 20 years later, but there's also a reason people remember this movie.
So it's like how I cherish Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yes. I was going to say, to kind of put this in Bond terms, this is the Die Another Day of the franchise, where it's a travesty, but because it's so much of a train wreck, you have to watch it. And that's Batman and Robin. Which is not Independence Day, though it did come out the year after Independence Day. And it did not have aliens in it. And I guess that's a thing we haven't talked about. What do you think of the alien design in this movie?
Average. They're just sort of there. Like, they're kind of xenomorphy, but without the, like, maximum phallic imagery. So they're just sort of competent.
Maximum phallic.
I do like that they have, like, the like the tentacle type arms and the huge heads, mm-hmm. which I guess are kind of xenomorphy. But, you know, like, we have this tendency, and I think around the same time Mars Attack came out, we have these tendencies, and I didn't realize this until I was watching like a Godzilla review. American monster designs are very reserved.
Yeah.
Like, we don't go crazy with them, where Japan's like, I don't care, put tentacles and whatever, and it doesn't have to be shaped like anything. And give it, like, five heads, whatever, go for it. Or give it a bunch of eyes. I mean, just think of Power Rangers. Power Rangers has some really wacky monster design. We're kind of like, okay, it has to be kind of humanoid, but deformed humanoid.
Yeah.
You know, it speaks through it with a mouth. You know, like, aliens don't need to, technically, aliens don't need to have, like, a face that we can recognize because they're aliens and that defeats the purpose.
Yeah, alien design, less so the design, but alien theory always bothers me because, I don't know, I'm not like an astrophysicist or anything like big like that. I don't know that much about what I'm talking about. But to me, when people, what really annoys me, it actually goes back to the root of like astroscience. What bothers me is when people say, oh, there's a planet that's been located in this spot for habitable life. It's like, how do we know that's habitable life?
Yeah,
maybe other alien races exist on, like, look at Mass Effect. We're one of a few carbon-based human or like life forms. There's a Turians are not carbon-based. They're forget what.
Okay.
I think so, something like that. Like it could be like the alien races out there could be like anything potentially. They don't have to be humanoid at all. They could be blah blah blah. But there's also theories that say like that. Stephen Hawking I think has said a quote that says like two hands, five fingers, 2 feet, five toes is like the most ideal amount. And so everything would evolve to that or something similar to that eventually if it was a humanoid creature.
So you're saying eventually every alien is going to evolve to the point where it can be sexualized by sad nerds?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just going to say, I mean,
there's a bunch of theory that I don't know behind it, but like what bothers me is that when people say like, oh, aliens need to be this, or like, or this is the habitable spot for aliens, like, no, it's not. Aliens are aliens. What do we know? We don't know anything beyond ourselves.
And we won't learn anything if we always treat them as hostile. If they could come in peace.
Yeah.
They could. I mean, that's why E.T. was so popular.
Or maybe they're already here and we just don't know it.
Like
Men in Black, exactly. But yeah, I was just, because it's alien design and alien ship or alien technology is always really weird because they always try to design it in a way that we can comprehend it,
yeah.
Which doesn't necessarily need to be the case. Kind of going back to Transformers, the recent one, they board an alien ship and he takes a weapon which ends up being like a gun that shoots aces. I'm like, why is it so human in design? Like it's an actual sword with a blaster inside of it. It's like something out of an RPG.
Yeah. I'm actually really, District 9 is one of my favorite movies.
Yes.
I really like District 9 and how they explain stuff like that. That was it.
let's see, trying to think of any other movie-related topics. I guess since we're about a little over halfway through the summer movie season, I guess best and worst of the summer so far?
Haven't seen anything that's come out this summer.
In that case, just say 22 Jump Street.
Okay, I was going to say 22 Jump Street has been my favorite movie of the summer so far. It's a comedy sequel done right. I was surprised.
There are about four of those at most.
Yeah, I'm beat down on comedy sequels. Like the teaser for Horrible Bosses 2 came out today. And the problem with comedy sequels is they tend to do what they did before, and 22 Jump Street does that, and it makes fun of itself for that, and knowing that that's the trap that a lot of movies fall into. They avoid that trap by pointing out the fact that that is the trap they would have fallen into.
And then dodge around it.
Yeah.
And then it's like they take the character stuff to new directions. Like, it's not like Ghostbusters 2, where they just reset, oh, everyone hates the Ghostbusters now. We're back to the same status quo we were at the beginning of the first movie.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's exactly how it works. I would also put X-Men Days of Future Past up there, Godzilla up there. As far as the worst film I've seen this summer, Transformers Age of Extinction. Easily.
Is it really? I've actually heard fairly good things about it, so that's interesting. Because I was expecting bad things.
Well, you see, okay, one, it depends on what you expect from this movie. If you expect a Michael Bay movie, you are going to get a Michael Bay movie. And if you go with those expectations, it will deliver on them. But if you are expecting anything else, it's a... Like, even for a Transformers film, I felt this was really disjointed. It feels like, you know, tying it back to the topic we were talking about, you know how we mentioned Independence Day has a pretty clear three-arc structure. It has rise in action, it has a climax, it has fall in action. Transformer has a starting plot, a secondary plot, and then a third plot. It's not connected. It's just like, okay, we're going to finish this plot, or we don't have time for this plot anymore. We're going to drop it and do something else. If you folks don't mind Transformers spoilers.
Not mind in the slightest.
Yeah.
Just the two examples, because after a while, I honestly just stopped paying attention to the plot. At the start of the film, Mark Wahlberg's character is a tinkerer. He's like he's an inventor. He messes around with doohickeys and stuff like this. This is how he discovers Optimus Prime. And Optimus Prime has been beat up from a recent battle and is in bad shape, and he's trying to fix him. The government hates Transformers, and that's explained in the movie, whatever. So they're on the run, and he's like, get me to the Autobots, they can help me. I'm like, okay, that's the reason for him to get to the Autobots. He passes a random truck on the highway that looks like his old truck. He scans it, and that's it. He's fixed. That was the arc of him. The whole 30 minutes we spent with Optimus' damage and needs assistance is done away in one... It's done away in, like, one quick scene.
What?
he passes it. He gets in. His rust falls off. He fixes everything. He gets his shiny color back. Like, what was the point of that? Like, you had the arc where Wahlberg was trying to fix him. Then you had the arc where he's trying to get the Autobots to be fixed. And then none of that matters. It's like, okay, we dropped that.
That's insane.
The other one, going back to the start, is that Wahlberg is, you know, he does this tinkering, but he doesn't make any money off of it. So his house is in danger of being foreclosed, and like a real estate agent comes and she's trying to show his house, and he runs her off and stuff like that, and they blow up his house. And that's the end of that.
Okay.
I'm like, what is, like, I don't get what any of this adds to the film. Like, okay, I get that he has no money. You don't need, like, there's no need for the scene with them trying to sell his house. The government mentions it when they're trying to take him into custody that he's owed money. They broke his house, and then it's not really brought up again until they joke about it at the end. He's like, haha, I have no house. And the rich guy's like, oh, I can help you with that. I'm like, so why do we spend half an hour with this?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like, these movies are, like, unimaginably long and so incredibly convoluted. For being action movies, like, you guys do know these things work when you have clear stakes and a compelling villain, and you keep things simple and under control, not 165 minutes long? How did this happen?
Is it really that long?
Yeah, it's almost 3 hours.
Something like that.
Dang.
I think, yeah. And it feels that way. It feels that way hard.
Is this like a direct continuation of the original trilogy?
Kind of.
How did they explain that, then?
They explain, like, that's why the Transformers are being hunted at the start of the film. I guess people took offense to the incident in Chicago, and the government started to hunt the Autobots and Decepticons as one and the same, and the Autobots went into hiding. Don't ask me how it explains what happens to Sam or anybody from the original trilogy.
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't. They aren't mentioned.
Well, he's not,
like,
not famous anymore, so.
Yeah, but like, anybody. They had the military people who helped them. They had Megan Fox. They had his parents.
They had that blonde woman from the first movie who was there for no reason.
The blonde woman from the third movie who
The blonde woman that hanged up with the wacky sidekick that existed for a filler because they realized, I guess, the script wasn't going to last 2 hours, so they had added more characters. Did they come back for the second one?
I honestly speaking, they were talking about the incident in Chicago, and I'm like, oh, okay, this happened in between movies. And then after I came out, people were like, no, that's the end of Transformers 3. I'm like, I don't remember any of these movies. at
Transformers 3
apparently.
Transformers 3 is one of the most boring movies ever made.
Yeah, it really is. Just I was actually fairly excited for it, and then it was really disappointing. I take all of them for what they are, but like I was excited for 3 and thought it was going to be fairly redeemable and pretty good, but no, felt it was pretty terrible.
Yeah, I found all of them like impossibly dull. I mean, like people talk about the big action, but I don't think Michael Bay is really that good at directing action scenes. Like occasionally he'll have really good shots, but the last like 4 seconds. And then we'll just move into this other action beat that has nothing to do with the rest. It's
oh
like
my
he just
gosh.
He took all the footage they filmed and just dumped it all there rather than actually edit it into a good action scene. It's like, come
oh
on. This is the
oh
one
gosh.
Thing you're doing. Why can't you do that right?
That reminds me of his other problems. And, you know, it's kind of funny because people give Zack Snyder crap for it. But at least Zack Snyder is aware enough to know what he's doing with and he does. But like he uses like that Panoran shot. And he uses that slow-mo at the weirdest times in the film.
Wait, like the slow-mo shot with the, like the low angle of the person as they're like slowly standing up with the sunset behind them.
Yeah,
that is the most Michael Bay shot ever. Like I think they even riffed on it in Hot Fuzz. Like I see that and I'm just all like, yeah, 90s blockbuster.
Hey, he does it at the start of this film with Wahlberg when he's standing on the farm and I'm like, why the hell is the like the sun like, and he's spinning around I'm like, what there's nothing going on in this shot. Why are we doing this? But there's
the
another
whole
one.
Movie at sunset.
There's another
he saw Days of Heaven back in the '70s, like, you know what, this whole sunset thing is cool, but you know what this needs, Malik? More American flags.
More American flags. Actually, how many American flags are in an Independence Day? I don't remember it being. Like, it's weird, and I know, but I don't remember Independence Day being too super patriotic.
Yeah, it's like, it is, in terms of, like, the stuff that happens, but I don't remember it being super heavy on, like, gratuitous flag imagery and whatnot.
It's not like, Americans, because, like, even his speech, it's not like, okay, we're Americans, it's like, you know, mankind, and it's talking about we're celebrating our Independence Day, it's not like Americans' Independence Day, stuff like that. So, yeah, I don't remember being like, even, like, the fighters weren't just like, oh, it's Americans all attacking them, it was, like, even the attack, even though the film centered around the American side, it's an attack that's a global thing, and they show those things across the globe. Since we did somehow magically get it back to Independence Day at the end of this, I'm going to start to wrap. What are your final thoughts on Independence Day?
It's a good movie. It's straightforward, and that's not a problem. It's a good example of, like, you don't need to be overly complex or, like, draw stuff out or do this or that to make a good movie. It's just, for what it is, it's good. Solid.
James?
It's the most competent movie ever made.
Yeah.
I think that's the best review of it ever. It works!
Yeah,
yeah it works.
Basically, that's what it
is. It is a simple movie that works.
In hindsight, it's not, we get better special effects, we've had better alien invasions. I'm sure, you know, there's better action set pieces and stuff like that, more interesting characters, but it works. Like, there's nothing that I can fundamentally say is wrong with this film. I wouldn't say anything about it super incredible, but nothing's wrong with it.
Yeah,
Okay, so next week, we will be back, hopefully, I think, with Trent. We are going to try to do a Common Arguments over Godzilla. Common Arguments, if you do not know, was a feature on the site where you picked apart different arguments from the interwebs, and it helps when something divisive, say Godzilla is. There are people who love it, and there are people who hate it. It is what it is.
That sounds exciting.
like I said, Friday is our Independence Day, so celebrate that. Hope nobody burns their fingers off with firecrackers. Eat all the hot dogs you can.
I'll be sure to do that.
Don't do anything foolish. Don't kill any immigrants.
Get as much good beer as you can. Or you can drink American beer, I guess, for that day. Not the same thing. So, I want to thank James and Dan. And this has been Nerds on the Rocks, episode 176. USA. USA.
USA. USA.